Chapter 4, The Fourth Principle, Expectations Must Be Set for Success. Hillary and her 12-year-old daughter came to see me after Shannon had gotten into some difficult problems. She was lying to her mother about where she was after school and was hanging out with a boy who had already been in trouble with the police. Her mother was distraught. Shannon was tight-lipped until she blurted out, "I'm never good enough for you." "Where did you ever get that?" Hillary said. "I have never said that."
"You don't have to," Shannon said. "You expect me to be perfect. I'm not you, Mom, and I'm not Jess either. Why can't you just leave me alone?"
"I just want you to make good decisions, honey," Hillary pleaded.
"No, you want me to make the decisions you would make."
Over the years, Shannon's mother had unintentionally and unconsciously sent Shannon the message that your way isn't good enough, you don't quite get it right, doing it my way would be better. Hillary would never dream of saying anything like that to her daughter. It came directly from her unspoken but clearly received expectations. Hillary had always thought it was her job to tell Shannon what to do so she would learn. She hadn't realized that she was expecting her very different daughter to be more like her. Fearing Shannon wouldn't get it right without her mother's prodding, Hillary had been erecting a wall of resistance in her younger daughter. Shannon's older sister, Jess, was a high achiever and, in Shannon's view, was the daughter her mother was proud of. Shannon assumed she was a disappointment and was starting to turn away. When a child is resistant to requests or demands, becomes parent deaf, or an attitude accompanies sarcastic remarks, parents panic, fearing their child will never succeed or measure up to what the world expects. Most want to enforce compliance and proper behavior, and do so with coercive tactics. Adjusting expectations to fit the child seems counterproductive. It feels too risky to address what the child needs rather than what society or the in-laws expect. Meeting certain parental expectations is often difficult or impossible for many children. Fear of our child's failure or unhappiness leads us to operate from the outside in. We want our children to meet the expectations by which we were raised, and so often set inappropriate expectations for many of our children. We set them with all the best intentions, but inadvertently prevent them from discovering their own way and encourage dependence on us or someone else, often leading to bad decision-making. The definition of success. As defined in Chapter 1, success indicates a child in balance with his world and with himself. He knows he's okay the way he is without sacrificing any part of his nature to win praise or approval. His internal emotional state is calm, even though his energy level may be high. When expectations are set for success, the child's development is understood, temperamental characteristics are accepted, and he can develop confidence in himself so his unique talents and abilities can flourish. The principles presented in this book support the belief that each child is born perfect, no matter what the learning style or handicap, and has come to us either by birth or adoption for the purpose of our mutual learning. When we demand that our children do it our way, we pull them off balance and plant obstacles in their path in an attempt to make ourselves feel or look better. That said, children's impulses and choices often get them into difficult situations. They can be annoying and cause problems for others due to their egocentric and self-serving natures. They need structure, limits, and realistic expectations. They need to understand and respect the rights of others. A balance must be found. The responsibility to influence children's behavior positively begins with the parent. Children behave in the way they perceive they are expected to behave. Because Shannon saw disappointment reflected in her mother's eyes, she perceived that her mother expected her to be a disappointment, so she believed she would be a disappointment no matter what. Hillary needs to look at her daughter through a new lens, one that focuses on her capability rather than her inadequacy. To do this, she must accept Shannon as she is, and she will then happily rise to meet a more positive view of herself, where expectations are high but appropriate for Shannon. High expectations are often unrealistic. Hillary thought that she was accepting Shannon, but her clue lies in Shannon's words and behaviors that tell her mother that something is wrong deep inside. Instead of insisting that Shannon is wrong to believe her mother wants perfection, Hillary needs to acknowledge Shannon's perception,
and look harder at what has been unconsciously set in place. A better response might be, if you're getting from me that I want you to be somebody different, I need to look at that. Can we talk this through, and will you tell me if you don't think I'm hearing you? With words like these, Shannon has little to fight against, and Hillary will find she has more influence than when she was telling Shannon what to do. We must know our children's individual strengths and weaknesses and have a realistic view of them. Then we can support their own capabilities rather than those we wish they had. But when children think their parents want them to be someone else, someone better, easier, smarter, they may angrily resist and sometimes self-destruct. Shannon is on the verge of adolescence. If she believes her mother wishes she were different, she will feel she doesn't belong and will look for a friend or group of friends who accept her for who she is. She will do whatever they want in order to belong. Her authority figure will switch to one who believes in her, or so she perceives. Our worst nightmare. When a child has spent years expected to do as she's told, she never has the opportunity to solve problems, think for herself, or learn to say no confidently. Adjusting expectations for success. We not only expect certain behaviors from our children, but we expect certain attitudes to accompany those behaviors. Not only do I expect my child to listen to me and do what I say, but I expect her to do it pleasantly without complaints. Not only do I expect my child to do the dishes, but I also expect her to do them the way I would do them. I expect my son to clean his room, but I also expect him to want a clean room. So even if they do what we want, we still set them up for failure if they don't do it the way we want. Wouldn't any child subject to such expectations end up feeling not quite good enough? Our children have a right to their feelings and their own way of accomplishing things. If your child is grudgingly taking the trash out as you've asked while muttering under his breath something about the stupid trash and something about his stupid brother never doing anything, restrain yourself from commenting. Let it be enough that he's doing it. Once children exhibit distressful behavior, expectations must adjust to what the child can be successful in meeting at the present time. A young child who hits other children if they don't do what he wants should not be expected to suddenly stop hitting. He will learn far better with a parent who understands that his aggressive energy is very real and can help him rechannel that energy. Hitting a pillow or punching bag, jumping on a trampoline, ripping up a drawing of who he's mad at, banging on a piano, rather than expecting the energy to disappear or the child to be able to stop it. You know the expression, choose your battles. Choose your expectations as well. Ask yourself whether the obstacle your child is experiencing is coming from your expectations, someone else's, the circumstance, or his internal emotional state, which may be a cumulative collection of past experience, his own expectations. Children can be harder on themselves than we are, but that internal pressure comes from somewhere. Remember, when you see inappropriate behavior, think, my child is having a problem, not being a problem. Alan had a tough time when he felt overstimulated by events and people from the time he was little. At home and one-on-one he was fine, but in the supermarket, at birthday parties, and at preschool, he had a very hard time staying calm and behaving appropriately. He would hide behind his mother when people approached, often grab the birthday presents at parties, and sometimes hit other children or his teacher at preschool. Barbara needed Alan, now 5, to be polite and socially adept, as had been expected of her. With each occurrence of difficult behavior, she would lecture Alan, telling him he had to be nice, say hello nicely, look someone in the eye and answer their questions, and certainly to stop hitting. As her expectations were met with even more aggressive attempts to push people away, Barbara's tactics became more controlling. She shouted, "You have got to learn to be polite. You can't be this way. It's perfectly easy. Just look at someone and say hello." Or, "When are you going to stop hitting? You're not a baby anymore." Alan's behavior evolved to grunting, sticking out his tongue at people, and even spitting. One day, when Barbara and Alan were in the supermarket, a loaded environment for him, a friend of Barbara's approached. As Barbara turned toward Alan with a hopefully expectant look, He grabbed her pocketbook from the shopping cart, swung it around and around above his head, and shouted nonsense words. Barbara was mortified. "Your expectations may be unrealistic for him," I suggested. "But isn't it important to set high expectations for our children?" Barbara asked. "Absolutely," I answered, "as long as your child can be successful meeting them. Your expectations of socially proper behavior may set Alan up for failure because he's not capable of meeting them right now. He's resisting what you want because he doesn't know how to do it. Start with where he is, and then as he becomes successful, you can gradually raise the bar." I suggested that she begin by understanding and accepting her son's sensitive and easily overloaded temperament and set her expectations accordingly. For instance, it would be appropriate to expect that he will have a hard time in public, especially meeting people, and to expect that he will not be able to say hello easily, so she should say it for both of them. She can expect that he will feel uncomfortable and nervous, but she can also expect him to stand next to her quietly while she puts her arm around his shoulders for comfort. "Oh, that sounds so nice," Barbara said. But she worried that that kind of response would condone Alan's behavior and give him permission to remain antisocial. It takes an enormous amount of trust to witness a child's highly inappropriate behavior and pull back on your expectations instead of raising them higher or using punishment, reprimands, and lectures to control the results you want. Raising and coercing expectations only convinces the child further that he is unacceptable. Alan was raising a huge red flag by swinging the pocketbook over his head. It was Barbara's clue to adjust her expectations. With more help, she did, and Alan has since settled into perfectly appropriate behavior at school and in his larger world, where he's now doing quite well. His aggressive tendencies have mellowed since rechanneling his energy into sports. He has good friends and even speaks politely to Barbara's friends. What does my child think I expect? The value our children perceive we place on them is the value they place on themselves. Children don't question our judgments. They question themselves. If I get angry with my 4-year-old for grabbing a doll away from her friend, tell her she's being mean, and send her to her room to think about it, she will not think, next time I won't grab what my friend is playing with. She will think that she has been bad. She won't have the maturity to detach and think, Mommy's wrong about me. I'm not mean. I just wanted to have that doll. But she might think, I can't ever do it right. Mommy doesn't love me. If we don't trust our children, they're likely to behave in an untrustworthy manner. But if we trust them and expect them to want to do the right thing, they will not want to betray that trust and will likely rise to the occasion. Every Christmas, Eve makes magnificent gingerbread houses for her girls. They devour them over the next few days. This Christmas, Eve decided to make her own gingerbread house as well. She decorated it simply and beautifully with white frosting and a few almonds and put a candle inside. She was quite proud of it and placed it in a prominent spot in the kitchen. Eve's nemesis, 3-year-old Madison, began saying, "I'm going to eat your gingerbread house," every time she didn't get her way. Eve told Madison it was hers and not for eating. But Madison's threats continued, and Eve began to threaten back. One day, an almond was missing from its front door. Shelley, Madison's older sister, told her mother that Madison had snitched it. Eve was livid, but brought the issue to our class before saying anything to Madison. Eve described an ungrateful, disrespectful brat to us. She was to the point of tears over Madison's constant defiant behavior. "It's like she's punishing me," she said. I asked Eve what she expected of Madison. She said emphatically, "to leave it alone, to respect that it's my special gingerbread house and to not eat it." I suggested that Madison had actually met that expectation. Eve did not agree. "No, she didn't. She's after me all the time about it. Why can't she just cut it out?" I proposed to Eve that she was actually expecting Madison to do a good deal more, to actually ignore the house completely. If she was going to leave it in Madison's sight, her expectation amounted to minor torture for her 3-year-old. In order to change things around, Eve would have to change her perception of her daughter.
She would need to see that Madison was having a problem, not being a problem, and adapt the situation for a 3-year-old. The tears poured out as she heard the suggestions from the class, what deep down she already knew. The missing almond was Madison's final clue that she had come to the brink of her ability to control her impulses. If she had seen Madison's threats and then the missing almond as signs, rather than acts of belligerence, Eve could have looked to the roots to see that Madison was just as frustrated as she was. There was even cause for congratulations for restraining herself that long. But Eve didn't recognize the behavior as clues and had set her daughter up to misbehave. Madison thought her mother saw her as bad, so she would have continued on that track. Her next step likely would have been smashing the gingerbread house. Most of us in class thought that Eve should simply move the house out of sight, but after clarity and objectivity replaced Eve's blurred perception, she came up with a better idea. "I think I'll go home and suggest to Madison that we make another little gingerbread house to sit next to mine, so they can be mother and daughter gingerbread houses. She'll love that." The next week we found out that not only had that worked, but when Madison was out with her father, she bought a tiny ceramic sheep to put outside the front door of her mother's gingerbread house. Their two houses sat peacefully side by side until a week later when Madison gave in to her temptation and ate hers. Her mother's was no longer a problem for her. When we focus only on our child's behavior, we often catastrophize that behavior to future crises and miss the opportunity to see what's really happening. If this focus continues throughout their development and our fears and worries drive our parenting, we do our children a serious disservice. Depression and rebellion are two avenues open to children who get the message again and again that they cannot meet up to what is expected of them. Misunderstandings and miscommunication can lead to fulfillment of our greatest fears. We have all seen the end products. We just don't put the pieces together to understand where it begins. A child's job is to get what he wants when he wants it. Children are always after what they want. It's normal. Actually, aren't we all? The older we get, the better we disguise it, but isn't that why we get so angry with our children? Because they're not doing what we want. This does not mean we should give them what they want, but when we hold the expectation that they should not ask for, fight for, demand what they want, we're holding a very unrealistic expectation. Not only is it developmentally appropriate for a child to go after what he wants, but also when the child is made to believe he's bad for wanting, his developmental drive is thwarted and he could develop narcissistic tendencies. When we fear something is going to be withheld from us or is no longer available, then when it is available, we hoard it or gorge on it. If a child is told over and over that he can't have what he wants, he will get more and more demanding. If your child says, "I want to build a rocket," instead of, "Don't be silly, you can't do that," try instead, "How can you make that happen?" It's our fears that prompt the immediate, "No, you can't." The anger and frustration that often accompany recurrent demands tells children that we expect them to be satisfied without what they want. But we don't have to pay money, sacrifice our time, or spoil a child to address the want. The want is normal. We may not get it for them, but we can let them know their desire is understandable. Dawn had warned her 11-year-old Jamie that they were only getting a gift for her aunt when they entered the department store. But sure enough, as soon as her back was turned, she heard, "Mom, I have to have this!" Dawn had spent years trying to teach Jamie that he couldn't always get what he wanted, but felt she was in a losing battle. Once she understood this principle, she tried something new. She walked over to see the red, shiny remote control car that had caught his attention. Instead of ignoring his desire and telling him he couldn't have it, she said, "Boy, that's beautiful, isn't it? I'm sure if I were you, I'd want that." Then she added, "I was in a store the other day and saw a chair I really wanted. I knew exactly where I'd put it in our living room. It was beautiful, but I couldn't afford it." He was amazed. She realized that he had never heard her talk about her desires or inability to buy something she wanted. They finished shopping and walked out of the store sharing stories about things they both wished for. She validated his desire, enough to allow him to move on. and he learns something about delayed gratification. Children will rise to a challenge when it's offered. Reacting to our children's behavior and taking it at face value can so easily lead us into power struggles and the cycle of worse and worse behavior. We will stop the power struggles only when we stop ourselves from reacting. Usually, when we detect a problem, we move right into directing mode, telling our children what to do or what not to do. Many children will then feel controlled and resist. We react, and battles ensue when they don't do what we want. Do we really expect them to back down and lose the battle willingly? Our easygoing, adaptable children might, actually, we wouldn't engage in the battle with them anyway, but our strong-willed, persistent children definitely will not back down unless we fight hard enough to break them. Amy has two girls, Olivia 5 and Emily 8. Olivia is the button pusher. She is stubborn, bullheaded, and does not like to be told what to do. She and her mother butt heads regularly. Amy and I have been searching for what provokes her daughter's angry meltdowns so Amy can stop focusing on what a terrible mother she is long enough to see the obstacle in Olivia's way. Being able to step outside her own perspective and into her daughter's requires Amy to have a point of objectivity. When she's frustrated in her own work, exhausted from normal mothering duties, and thinks she hasn't a clue how to handle her daughter, her perspective narrows. She takes Olivia's behavior very personally. All she can think is, what is wrong with her? What doesn't she understand about what I've asked her to do? She's ungrateful and inconsiderate, and she's screwing with me. Olivia and her older sister Emily were playing with the two boys who lived next door, one a year older and one a year younger than Emily. As usual, the three older children didn't want to do what Olivia wanted to do. Not one to back down and play what they wanted, Olivia tried different tactics to get them engaged with her, but to no avail. Suddenly, she dashed through the kitchen and headed up the back stairs when her mother stopped her. "You can't go up there. I just mopped the stairs." Olivia cried, "I have to get my new game." "You can get it in 10 minutes when the stairs are dry," Amy said, expecting that Olivia should understand and cooperate. Instead, Olivia lost it. She screamed and cried that it wasn't fair, that she hated everybody, that her life was terrible. Amy could only see that Olivia was being unreasonable and uncooperative, stuck in a world of her own, unable ever to be considerate of anyone else. "What didn't she understand about the stairs being just cleaned?" Amy exclaimed to me. "I had just finished mopping the whole kitchen and the stairs, and then she starts with this." Amy saw that her job as a mother was to teach Olivia to see the right way, and if she couldn't, there was something wrong with Olivia. As soon as I suggested that perhaps Olivia had a plan in mind that this game might be something all four of them would want to play, and in her 5-year-old brain she didn't have a minute to lose, Amy said, "Oh, I never thought of that. I'm sure you're right." If Amy could have understood the immediacy of Olivia's agenda and based her expectations on her daughter's intense determination, she might have been able to problem-solve instead of incite a riot. Instead, Amy's expectations were set for a child who would be able to see the hard work her mother had just put in, understand that her shoes would dirty the just-cleaned steps, and would step aside, apologize, and wait for 10 minutes. Realistic? Why is it as parents we don't stop and think? Why is it so hard to hold expectations that are appropriate? Don't we adore our kids and want only the best? It must be because we are afraid that if our expectations are not set for the people we hope our children to become, they will never become those people and end up failures, ourselves along with them. So we focus on those elusive qualities we want to instill and ironically chip away at our children's self-confidence. We miss all kinds of teaching opportunities. "Olivia, wait, I just mopped the stairs. How can you get upstairs without getting any dirt from your shoes on the clean steps?" This sets a challenge for Olivia, rather than thwarting her plan. Being the highly spirited child she is, Olivia would have risen to that challenge, thought about the problem, and chosen any number of creative solutions, from taking off her shoes and going up in her socks, to putting plastic bags over her shoes, to climbing up on her hands and knees. But what if Amy wasn't that quick on her feet? What if she was still reactive, yet took time to think once the meltdown occurred? If Amy saw the meltdown as Olivia's uncontainable frustration due to her persistent nature instead of a lack of consideration, she could say, "Boy, you really want to get to that game fast, don't you? You must have a plan in mind." Then she could ask Olivia how she could do it without getting the steps dirty. For many, this might feel like backing down, giving in, rewarding bad behavior, and letting Olivia get away with her demands. But by stopping her reaction and adjusting her unrealistic expectation, Amy is in no way backing down or losing authority. Saying what we mean and meaning what we say is one thing, but saying something unreasonable and then changing it to something reasonable is the smart thing to do. Acknowledging strengths and weaknesses. Appropriate expectations need to be based on the characteristics and qualities of each person. We all have strengths and weaknesses, talents and quirks. Talk with your children about personality qualities. Ask them to judge their own. What do you think are your best qualities and strengths? What are the most difficult parts of your personality? Can you think of what you might learn from those difficult parts? What are the strengths and weaknesses of your siblings? What do you see as my best and worst qualities? What happens when we're both at our best and both at our worst? Rich discussions can come from thinking about what you all do well and what you don't. A relaxed acceptance of personal deficits allows children to be more tolerant of themselves and others and to see the humanness in everyone. It can be useful to talk to a child about her difficulty with shifts in plans, the roughness or prickliness of new clothes and tags, certain tastes, being quick to feel upset or scared. Then you can add how well she pays attention and focuses on what she's doing, how thoughtful she is toward others, or how easy it is for her to try new foods. Children need to know that their idiosyncrasies are normal, that we all have them, and that they are always balanced with attributes. Our children's expectations of themselves can be too high. Children sometimes put more pressure on themselves than we do. They don't want to disappoint us, or anyone for that matter. This may lead some to being very good, diligent, and working too hard at what they think will make everyone proud. The tension may cause physical illness, poor appetite or sleep, or a quick fuse on a child who is normally easygoing. When you see this self-imposed pressure, it may be time to intervene with a mental health day from school and engage in something fun and relaxing. Evaluate your child's school performance. If he's doing well, be sure to pull way back on any performance-related expectations you may be imposing. Ask your child to evaluate all his activities and choose one or two to drop for the time being. Chewing nails, pulling out hair, nervous tics, headbanging, stomach aches, and wetting the bed after a long time of control are all signs of stress. We have a myth that childhood is a stress-free time of life. It is not true. When children live under high expectations at the same time they're developing their own identities, almost everything has the potential of being confusing and frustrating for them. We need to give them a break and let them just be or play and hang out. They don't need to behave like little adults to appreciate what we're doing for them or to take on more activities than they can handle so we can be proud of them. When expectations are set appropriately, our children will feel good about themselves, confident of their abilities, accepting of their abilities, relaxed and fun to be with. They will feel balanced and successful. Main ideas from Chapter 4. Unspoken, unexamined expectations set many children up for failure. They're usually set for the child you want. Children behave in the way they perceive they're expected to behave. Setting expectations for successful behavior means beginning with adjusting expectations for what is happening in the present. Children who don't believe they can live up to what their parents expect of them often rebel or become depressed. A child's job is to get what he wants when he wants it. Giving it may be inappropriate, but expecting otherwise is unrealistic. We can acknowledge a child's want without sacrificing time, spending money, or spoiling the child. Inappropriate or unrealistic expectations lead to power struggles and cycles of worse and worse behavior. Respecting a child's agenda rather than expecting obedience encourages cooperation. Fears of future ingrates and deviants fuel expectations that are too high. Adjusting unrealistic expectations and empathizing with a child's desires is not backing down or giving up. It's modeling effective behavior. Practice. Get in the habit of asking yourself, "What am I expecting?" in situations where you get resistance. Then ask, "How able is my child to do what I expect, given her temperament, age, and stage of development?" Even if your expectations are perfectly appropriate, understand that children don't like being told what to do and when to do it. Let your child know what you want done and ask her when you can expect her to do it. Expect that she will need a reminder. If your child is consistently not behaving in the way you expect, try adjusting your expectation and focus on what your child is doing well, even if she doesn't do it often. Sometime when things are going smoothly, ask your child if he ever thinks that you're expecting too much from him or that you expect him to be someone he's not.